The man who does not need any introduction, James Romer. We're just going to start this week's MTOM podcast. I think, James, you're fighting Colleen Bradford Krantz for most frequent appearances on this podcast. For sure, certain, those who are out of the market-to-market aisle. So good to see you again.
I'm privileged. Fantastic. Thanks.
Well, I like to talk the weather with you. And we kind of touch base every few months, and I'm always looking at what you're sending. And the map right behind you is one that I look at most weeks, and I think a lot of other people do, the drought monitor. You've kind of carved some things out. Before, though, we get into that map, and I'll give you, those of you who are listening to this one, I'm going to say you should probably watch this one on YouTube, because James is going to show us a bunch of charts and talk us through. That's kind of what this, I won't say shtick is about, but it's the way your presentation is, right?
That's right. Yeah, we're going to talk about great market, La Nina, whatever you like, and the longer range forecast, and also these markets, these volatile markets.
So. All right. So when I say, is the weather doing what you thought it would do 6 months ago?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we did feel La Nina would continue. A lot of people didn't think it would. And the one real close call we're having right now that I wasn't quite sure about 6 months ago, some of these La Nina years tend to have droughts expand into the Western Corn Belt, like you saw last summer. It was mainly in the spring wheat areas of the oats region in Canada, the Northern Plains. We lucked out with great yields in Iowa and the Midwest. But sometimes with La Nina, we begin to see a little bit drier weather into Iowa and Western Corn Belt. We're right on the fringe of having some problems this summer. Hopefully, they're going to stay west of us.
All right. When you think of fringes and zones, it's so easy to get into backyarditis and think, well, I've been getting rain or I've been dry. Why doesn't the market respond? Why doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, obviously the stronger dollar has put pressure on prices here recently. But you look at the soybean and corn crop right now, you know, roughly, what, 65-70% is in good, excellent condition across the majority of the belt. There's isolated pockets, particularly eastern Nebraska, which is going to be over 100 degrees for a while, isolated pockets of dryness. And I think, you know, at $7 corn, you know, a few weeks ago or so, and $16 to $17 beans, you need really a full-fledged drought and yields of corn below 170 bushels an acre and beans in the mid to high 40s to really get a major bull market at these prices.
James, you're of Best Weather, Inc., and you also, another word that begins with B is beef cow inventory. That's what you're showing us right now. You've kind of pulled out some of the Dakotas all the way from North Dakota to Texas. Those are areas. North Dakota's been getting rain to the point they had snow and delayed planting. South Dakota, at least the northeast part of it, a little better. Nebraska's kind of that bridge gap. Kansas has kind of been hit or miss. I mean, you'll see people who are begging for rain, and then the next day they get 8 inches. As we go farther south, what is the story that you see when you look at maps and how that influences? We'll specifically talk beef cows in the regions of Oklahoma and Texas.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, we still have this east-based La Nina. Notice it's east because the ocean temperatures are cooler near Peru than they are, you know, over the central Atlantic. Actually, an east-based La Nina could typically mean another active hurricane season again because it reduces shear. We need to get some of that rain into Texas, obviously, right? Well, typically that kind of La Nina situation in the summer tends to produce, there you see the hottest weather in east-based La Nina through August. Over the plains and particularly the western United States, you can see in the middle there, there's no real red. That means kind of an oscillating weather pattern, maybe normal temperatures from the Midwest for August, but the drought in the southwest, unfortunately, with La Nina, will probably continue through the rest of the summer.
Okay, and that means, so what, okay, when you say that the weather is to the east, what takes it to move it west, to change that circle and change us from a La Nina pattern to something else?
Well, as La Nina weakens and we go toward a neutral phenomenon, I'm not quite sure El Nino will actually form. If we go toward El Nino and begin to see these ocean temperatures warm up as we go into September, October, November, that will begin to ease that dryness in the southwest. But right now, La Nina is going to stay around for at least another month or two.
And what has that been doing? What's La Nina do specifically where you're pointing at with the map with that big country we call Brazil? We're always watching what they're doing. How does that impact the producers of Brazil?
Well, here is, you know, this is actually in September. I'm looking ahead a couple months here with La Nina continuing. I noticed the red in much of Central through Northern South America, hotter than normal. That continues, obviously, into November, December with a bullish reaction in corn and beans. Notice the Midwest. An east-based La Nina, not west-based, tends to have a cool fall. Will we have a frost? Well, you know, we had some like in the 1974 one and a few others since then, but this warming over the Arctic Circle right now, look at this, 32 degrees Celsius, close to 90 degrees. To me, you don't really have the cold sources to cause probably a major Corn Belt freeze, like luckily, based on this east-based La Nina, maybe a cool September, normal rainfall, but the odds of a major frost probably unlikely. South America is still up in the air. I know I'm bouncing around here a little bit. That hot weather you see in northern and central Brazil in September, if La Nina weakens come November, December during planting, then all bets are off, hopefully, for, farmers want a drought in South America. So if La Nina was to remain, the ideal situation would be, yes, a drought in South America, and then La Nina weaken in the spring next year and bring great crops to Midwest farmers. That would be the ideal scenario, obviously.
I have to say, James, there's a whole lot of people who, when they hear early frost, especially in some of those states that I just mentioned, North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, they were nervous when you started that statement and then relaxed a little bit as you went on. What are the prospects of that early frost?
You're right. I mean, other than the snow in Saskatchewan, the late plantings in North and South Dakota, the opposite of last year's drought, you know, we had this Duraco again a couple weeks ago up in South Dakota, northern Iowa, very, very wet weather up there. So, yes, if we get into the situation, as you see that blue in the center of your screen there with an east-based La Nina, a cool fall, yes, that can nip the corn and soybean crops, particularly up in the Dakotas and maybe parts of Minnesota. But hopefully because of the warming Arctic, Iowa and states south and east won't have like a 1974 situation that just – wiped out crops. Wet spring back then. I was still a kid in high school. Drought in the summer, and then a third whammy was, of course, the freezes. And we've had, I think, two major freezes since 1974, but because what I believe is a warming planet, not nearly the frequency of frost that we saw all during the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
We're recording this in mid-July, and that's when this is going to air. As we look at the timing of things. Pollination is usually something that happens around the 4th of July. You buy about 2 weeks of volatility when it comes to will we pollinate, will we not. Is that what the market is trading as we sit here tonight, James? That volatility of a delayed pollination. And as soon as we get to, say, late July, do we calm down on volatility, on weather-related factors?
Well, in corn, we certainly will, but in soybeans, as you know, Paul, you know, August is the most important month, and this is going to be a close call because that western dome, that ridge that you see there, the red, if it moves a little bit further east, could cause a lot of volatility in soybeans in the month of August. For July, yes, pollination a little bit late in some areas. The market first looked at this dome, this was a couple weeks ago, actually, over the Midwest for mid-July, which was a complete bust, which I'm used to actually out forecasting. This is why corn and beans jumped around the 8th to 10th of the month. Look at this, predictions of 95 to 110 degree heat in Iowa and Nebraska, when in reality, the dome's gonna actually be further west. Look at that, the difference between these models in mid-July and now. That means some rains off and on into the western and central corn belt. I think through the most stages of the pollination, as the main real heat and main dome exacerbates this drought in red, you know, to the west of us in Nebraska, Kansas, South Dakota. The bottom line is that, you know, plus 175 bushel per acre corn, 51.5, 53 bushels per acre soybeans, unless August is hot and dry. That's not a bull scenario, I think, for farmers at these prices. Volatility will continue, but I think the highs we saw this spring and early summer probably in.
Has the weather and how much it influences the market changed in your career?
Well, it really has. And I think, Paul, you know, a lot of it is this program trading and like Robin Hood and all these kids, you know, jumping into futures and moving markets.
You didn't shake your fist enough to say, you kids.
You kids, go out there, play a little baseball and don't be a meteorologist. No, actually, it's a good career. But I think that, you know, the Chinese situation, too, with all the political ramifications going on and COVID and, you know, the tariffs a couple of years ago. And now, you know, there's multiple billion-dollar hedge funds, whereas, you know, back in the 80s, 90s, even until 5-10 years ago, there weren't these. So there's a lot of program electronic trading going on as well, making things, you know, sometimes very volatile. But, you know, July is a pollination month for corn. Soybeans is a potting month for soybeans. I've been watching this for 35 years. The volatility is always going on. Every time a weather map, you know, comes out like this, oh, death and destruction, a dome. Beans rally a dollar, and then 5 days later, a bunch of, you know, malarkey. Yeah. So yeah, this will continue through the summer.
All right, malarkey. You showed you talked about the derecho a little bit. Go back to the green screen that you had. This is the third derecho since 2020 that's hit Iowa.
Yeah.
South Dakota blown over corn, Minnesota, Iowa. Now, those who pay attention to Instagram and Facebook of the market-to-market variety had some strong opinions about this, that, oh, you're fear-mongering, or it's going to bounce back up, it's going to blow. It's a similar question to what I asked you just a couple of minutes ago. How much does that impact? And that what happens in my backyard when we see these pictures of blown over corn of across several hundred acres, is that influencing the market?
You know, I did. I think we had one with 2 years ago, right? That was devastating.
That was the worst one.
We lost millions of bushels of corn and beans. This one was mild in comparison, not in all the major producing areas. Certainly some of your viewers and listeners out there have been hurt by this derecho. My apologies. Unfortunately, the market's not going to react to it unless we have more that wipe out, you know, hopefully not, you know, millions of acres of farmland. These are very, very hard to predict. I think that the climate extremes we've seen of record cold weather in the spring up in Canada and record heat in the Southwest, when those collide, those two jet streams, models predict rain, sometimes it's 5 to 8 inches more than the models say, with, you know, 75, 80 mile an hour winds. It's very hard to isolate that because I see a couple of what we call rim of fire type storms, the main ridge to the west of us. But around that ridge, these little disturbances come down and produce thunderstorms and rain. I see that continuing, you know, right through the end of July. Hopefully we're not going to have one of these derechos, but they're very hard to predict.
Derecho. See, I call it derecho. You say derecho. Is that a...
I'm from the East. My apologies.
No, but no, that's like many other things. We always disagree. There's different ways of pronouncing things. And, I'm not sure if we get it right.
So I played in about 8 different tennis tournaments. Look at my elbow. In the Midwest, they call it tournament, right?
Yeah.
I say tournament.
Yeah.
I'll get my pronunciation right. I have to move back to Iowa, and I'll get everything... taken care of.
What is it? Okay, but I'm another point on this weather thing. When we go to 2020 derecho, it took the market a little bit to react to it. However, we still hit that trend line yield, or we still hit a trend line yield most years, no matter whether it's rainy or a late plant, an early frost, a drought.
Yeah.
What's that a testament to?
Well, what do you think? I mean, part of it could be the GMOs, right? I mean, and drought-resistant seeds.
The genetics.
It could be partly that. Just better farming procedures, things like that. I mean, the last real severe drought we really had, in which that was a complete weather market, in which beans went to $12 or $13 and corn to 7 or 8 was 2011-2012 La Nina. That was a different scenario than we've had right now, as far as other ocean temperatures around the world. But back then, that, you know, we had well below trend line yields in corn and soybeans. And I think right now we've lucked out with more timely rainfall during these occasional dry spells, and we haven't had, you know, consistent, you know, soil moisture problems with 95 to 105 degree heat. We just haven't really had that. I mean, this is the drought index, you know, actually mid-June. It hasn't really changed that much. Sorry, I didn't update this. It hasn't really changed that much. And back during 2011, 2012, the last major bull summer grain market, we had that red all through the Midwest, all the way to Illinois, Indiana. We started with a relatively good soil moisture. Mm-hmm. We haven't had the consistent heat and dryness.
All right, that's a mid-June. Like you said, much hasn't changed. Point for me the New Mexico area, Arizona, West Texas. A couple of episodes ago here on this podcast, we talked with a producer in New Mexico, and she was telling me about how we hadn't had rain in that state, and they have since had some as monsoon season has entered. How serious is the rainfall in the West, and is there any relief in, say, West Texas, Oklahoma, all the way up to the Pacific Northwest? Is there any type of rain pattern change for any of them?
I don't really see it right now, but the circulation of the dome that I talked about, which once again is not over the heart of the Corn Belt, like models were saying, but a little bit further west, that circulation clockwise around that particular dome will bring monsoon rains, hopefully, to the Dakotas and parts of the Southwest, not Texas and Oklahoma. So the drought continues, affects cattle, it affects cotton production. The cotton market really hasn't rallied a lot at all. It's collapsed because the dollar keeps strengthening. Here's the dollar as of, you know, early July because of concerns of rising interest rates. So a lot of commodities being affected by the outside markets. But, you know, the big problem is, you know, like Lake Mead in Nevada, there's millions of people still suffering from this drought and people having to switch over from hydropower to natural gas. The grid has been down, you know, in some parts of the West off and on for the last couple of years because of this multi-year drought. And unfortunately, I really don't see that weakening much unless La Nina weakens, which may occur this winter and spring. Hopefully, by 2023, we'll begin to see the drought ease somewhat out west and water supplies being replenished.
What else is a big story weather-related?
Well, I think, you know, from a commodities perspective, you know, everybody's just really concerned about, obviously, inflation and the dollar and what's going to be happening down the road with the economy. We talked about this briefly. You know, we look at interest rates at, what, 5 or 6% right now compared to the 80s and 90s. They're still below, let's say, trend line in the last 30 years. It's not that big of a deal. So this sell-off in the stock market, you know, was due. We've had a huge rally since 2008, but are we going into a real recession? Is this going to be a situation that the dollar's going to continue to strengthen and pressure commodities another 20-25%? I really don't think so. What I do see if La Nina weakens is maybe a rebound in global production of grains, particularly wheat, corn, and soybeans in South America and the Northern Hemisphere next year. That could be a more longer-term bearish scenario, more so than I think worrying about, you know, the dollar continuing to strengthen, you know, forever here at multi-year highs. At some point, the dollar may begin to top out if we find that the recession is not as worse as people fear.
Is recession for you a capital R or lowercase r? How serious will
it be? I have it on there. I better make it lowercase.
Well, no, I'm just curious. Do you think, I mean, there's going to be have to be some form of a easing of some prices just by cycle nature.
Well, Thomas Friedman, you may have heard of, the great reporter, I think wrote a book years ago called The World is Flat. You know, how you know, 20, 30 years ago, we didn't rely on China or argue with China about every little thing, you know. It was really a U.S.-based economy. Now with the shutdowns in China, you know, with COVID, other restrictions, things going on, you know, what happens in other parts of the world with Russia, obviously the Ukraine situation, that big impact in these markets. I mean, we went to $13 or $14. I became bearish, actually, wrote a lot of this down for my clients because of the big crops in Australia, Russia, and the harvest pressure we've seen in the plains. Even though there was a drought, the harvest is going along fine without wet weather. Luckily, we caught that move down in wheat for our weather wealth clients in my newsletter in the last few months. But so the point is that there's so much going on in the world politically right now. There could be a black swan at any moment. And that's just very hard to predict.
Oh, it is. And if you could, you're in the wrong business.
That's right.
But black swans can be exacerbated by certain scenarios and situations. If we already have less grain or more grain and something happens, or a dollar that is topping out at 107 and something happens. I mean, where's the perspective and the step back and the look back of where we're at? Who needs to step back and say, 6%, you know, really, like you just said, isn't as bad as...
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like we've both gotten used to, if you bought a house or renting or whatever, you know, 2 or 3% interest rates and relatively stable rentals properties, you know, houses, whatever. I mean, down in Florida and parts of the Midwest and East, we've seen rental prices increase 40% in a year. I mean, there's so many factors that are just causing this volatility in markets and unknowns, from the Russian-Ukraine war to the weather to the dollar to everything else, that, you know, sometimes you just have to try to take a step back and think about, has this happened before in history, and follow market trends and cycles. Sometimes you can go back to the 16th or 17th century in Holland. I mean, math psychology has a big influence on markets, and we can go back and look at history sometimes for hundreds of years and see what happened during black swan events and you know, panic in certain markets.
There's a word over your shoulder, Bitcoin. How much of the crash in Bitcoin is impacting commodities?
I don't think it's affecting commodities directly, but what it suggests is that people that rode this bull market in grains, you know, from $10, $11 in beans to $17 on the South American drought last winter, their summer, and the Russian-Ukraine war concerns, which is really a knee-jerk reaction in corn and soybeans, because they don't grow any soybeans in Ukraine. They grow wheat. So beans were pretty much overpriced. But I think that the fact that people are putting money back into the dollar, taking money out of the stock market, you're also trying to cash in on profits if you have that in Bitcoin. It's just a mass exodus from a lot of these markets. And I think that's also means people are just taking their profits in commodities right now. It's not that the world fundamentals are bearish. It's just that the markets were overreacted to the upside. You know very well that markets tend to react bullishly and bearishly. Sometimes people follow the herd by 10, 20% and then come back to normal. So what is normal? Maybe $5 corn, like $11 to $12 beans. I don't think we'll see $7 or $16 again, unless we got a South American weather problem next winter.
Normal. What is normal? If you can define it, we'll be fine. We can't.
Extremes. Normal is made up of extremes.
Do you think the computers have made following the herd easier or more prevalent?
Weather models or
commodities? I mean, you talk about the computers and you talk about investors following the herd. I mean, the computers can get reprogrammed in a hurry. Are they programmed now to follow trends?
I think they really are, because look at this. This was as of late, early July. This is the percent decrease, sorry, I'm in the picture there, of all commodities from silver to gold to grains. And everyone is looking at the charts. Everybody is panicking. I mean, how many of these are bullish? Almost every commodity is sold off. Normally, you think of those as gains. This is the opposite now. These are percent losses over the last few months.
So this is from what? Say July 1 to or January 1 to
this
July.
This is from January through July.
Okay, so the first 6 months of the year. All right, you have stars. You have a star that says denotes at least partially weather related. And let me see if I'm reading these right here. I'm seeing a coffee, a soybean meal, soybeans, corn. And I don't know if that's soybean oil, natural gas between those two.
Yeah, soybean oil. Sorry, part of the screen's cut off. There's rapeseed, there's cotton, there's cocoa. That's at the bottom, but I didn't show all those. But
and those are big losers if they're cut off on your screen, because you've got Chicago wheat at the bottom, and that's a 20, almost 5% loss in 6 months. But let's look at it this way. We kind of came into the year pretty hot. We were already hot.
That's my point. So since people, you talked about Bitcoin, everyone's just piling out everything at the same time. The dollar is part of the reason, worries about the Ukraine war, the weather improving in certain parts of the world. It's about four or five factors that are bearish right now, maybe one or two that are bullish. So I don't see any major bull market in most commodities. I mean, you look at some of the precious metals like silver and gold that have dropped 20 to 25%. That's because in recessionary times right now, there's so many other alternatives other than buying gold. I mean, this is the inverse ETF of gold. Being short gold has rallied about 10 to 20% over the last 2 months. Gold price has dropped from $2,000 to $1,730 an ounce. Why is that? Because we don't have the inflationary hedge gold used to be 20, 30 years ago now, because there's ETFs, there's Bitcoin, there's other alternative investments. And that's why things like gold and strengthening dollar have gone into a downtrend.
Let alone alternative thinking in how we do this. I mean, a lot of these norms are out the window. How do you protect yourself on a when the norms are gone?
Yeah, you know, you have to look at trend following. I do some of that. You know, we have to learn how to read the charts, both short and longer term, and limit risk in certain markets. If you have some good profits, tell yourself, hey, I made all this money in corn and beans. I'm only going to risk 10%. And I'm guilty of not doing that myself. Believe me, it's easier said than done. You got to have discipline and a plan in these volatile markets. And, you know, for farmers in Iowa and all through the Midwest, you know, I've helped advise them for years. Options are a great thing, obviously. You know, selling call options right now, like July or November 2023 calls, a year and a half out, we're not going to see beans back to $17 again. And you could make a pretty good penny selling calls, you know, $3 out in beans and corn $1.50 away. I'd love to see higher grain prices, but again, it's going to take a real disaster in South America, which I don't think is going to happen this year, and also a much weaker dollar.
All right, let's spin back to the beginning. Is there any charts, pictures you want to show and we talk about?
Yeah, well,
I've kind of gone all over with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so based upon that East Base La Nina that I talked about, and again, here are the ocean temperatures here. Notice it's East Base because the coolest ocean is near Peru. All La Ninas are different. There's other factors regarding sea ice, what happens 10,000 miles away. It's very complicated, but just based on La Nina itself, this is August temperatures, the hottest weather, maybe inching just into Nebraska and western Iowa, the real dome of heat, luckily to the west of the Corn Belt. And then what happens with rainfall? Going back to 1950, East Base La Ninas do see a few dry pockets there in red. This is kind of a summary of all the East Base La Ninas, about six or seven of them since the 1950s. There are a few dry pockets there you see, particularly over the plains. So could that impact soybean yields? Possibly a little bit. But again, I don't see a disaster. And the reason I don't see that disaster is, again, because the main dome in red stays west of us over the drought-stricken areas of Texas all the way out to California.
I don't hear you saying much about many hurdles for trend line, at least trend line yields in, say, areas from the Missouri River east.
Yeah, I think that we're going to have mostly a northwesterly flow, and that means what we call MCCs and rim of fire type of storms. And without the extreme heat, I mean, once again, this was the forecast in late June for the first half of July, 110 degrees. Dew points are so high right now. We're going to be seeing rain coming in here off and on. That means the models are 10 to 15 degrees too hot. Drier dew points tend to raise the temperature in drier soils. We don't have a severe drought, as you know, in Iowa right now. Models are being overzealous. So I think we're going to be seeing relatively above trend line yields, certainly normal, over 70% or 80% of the corn and soybean growing area. That does not bode well for a bull market.
You in my last meeting, James? Because you just said something that somebody presented at our staff meeting, talking about technology. And don't rely on technology to do your job. And if you're relying on the technology of forecasting models and you're not actually understanding that it has rained 8 inches in this area over the last 2 weeks, therefore there's no dry soil, the common sense, I've been on this land, I've been here for generations, might beat that computer again.
You're absolutely right. It's amazing. You know, farmers I've talked to in Iowa, Nebraska, all over the Midwest, when I lived there for 10 to 15 years, used to believe, you know, like red sky at morn, sailor take warn, right? There's a storm coming, you know, or just a variety of weather folklore that, you know, in some ways is better than these darn models.
Yeah.
And, you know, here for the last time was this big dome that helped beans soar about a few days after the bearish June 30th report. In a major sell-off, the first week of July, we saw a big rally in corn and soybeans. But again, my model has basically said, wait a minute, folks. And, based upon La Nina, these models are overzealous. The dome is to the west of the Corn Belt. That means off and on rains. And again, I'm sorry for some people that got flooding rains. It's very hard to predict micro-scale meteorology. A general overall outlook shows you that the main heat and dryness is to the west of the Corn Belt, probably into early to mid-August.
James Romer, Best Weather Inc. Always great to chat with you. And thank you, as always, for giving us a wild tour of the world.
Yeah, check out my newsletters on my site. I'm helping farmers from Australia to South America, the Midwest, up to the minute information. I've been doing this for a long time, and trading strategies. I have two newsletters, Weather Wealth and Climate Intelligence. So love to give you a free trial or sample. Go to my site.
All right, James Romer, thank you so much. That'll do it for this installment of the MTOM podcast. He's been our guest. I've been your host. We'll see you next time.